More than 500 people in Mexico have been diagnosed with the New World screwworm since 2025, according to a recent study that finds cases accelerating into 2026. Welcome to Debug the Hype. I'm Alex Morgan, and this show is not affiliated with Reddit or any subreddit. Today is August 10th, 2026. That outbreak is a sharp reminder that old biological threats can reappear with modern consequences. Britain just set a new record for the number of days above 30 degrees Celsius this year, and forecasters say another heat spike could push parts of England and Wales into the mid-30s next week, according to the Met Office. Public health agencies estimate there were about 2,877 heat-associated deaths during heat waves in May and June, so expect renewed pressure on the NHS and transport networks as more very hot days pile up. Watch how local services and rail operators respond. Heat now strains hospitals and infrastructure with a predictability that makes preparedness a political choice, not a weather surprise. The UK Ministry of Defence quietly found that commercial cameras fitted to uncrewed naval drones were sending heartbeat communications to servers in China during a routine cyber vulnerability assessment, and the MOD says it cut the external connectivity while investigators checked systems and found no evidence of MOD data being exfiltrated. This is a classic supply chain shock. Cheap, global components can introduce network traffic that looks harmless until someone notices. Expect tighter vetting of sensors and renewed political heat over Chinese hardware and Western arms.
In Sweden, a Russian couple who have lived in Spain for 5 years were detained while camping and are now in a deportation center after police cited their Russian accents and the presence of two tourist walkie-talkies. Rights groups say the pair do humanitarian and anti-war work, and critics warn that security screening of Russian emigres is sliding into profiling. This case is small but symbolic. Watch for more legal fights over how democracies balance legitimate security checks with civil liberties protections for dissidents.
Mexico's screwworm comeback is worse than a medical oddity. The recent study of 204 confirmed myiasis cases from April 2025 to March 2026 looked closely at 202 patients and found 6 deaths, a mean patient age of 61, 72% male, and 77% with underlying conditions such as diabetes or cancer. And those numbers matter because they pinpoint who's most vulnerable and why the outbreak can rapidly become lethal in older, medically fragile populations. The screwworm fly is not a slow nuisance. The report quotes the chilling detail that the maggots hatch within a day and begin ravenously feasting on the living flesh of their victims, which creates fast-growing wounds that invite secondary infection, sepsis, and irreversible tissue damage unless clinicians act very quickly. That clinical urgency changes what public health must buy and where it must place resources, from emergency surgical capacity to quicker diagnostic training in rural clinics. Beyond the human toll, this is an enormous animal health problem too. Mexican authorities have reported more than 36,000 animal cases, and there have already been confirmed animal detections north of the border in the United States, which transforms the issue from a local exotic pest into a trans-border economic and biosecurity headache for ranchers, veterinarians, and public health agencies across North America. The history matters. The New World screwworm was once eradicated from North America using the sterile insect technique, a coordinated program of mass-releasing sterilized male flies. But that biological barrier was breached in 2022, and the pest has since reestablished, which is an operational lesson in how fragile eradication programs are when surveillance and funding lapse. The scientists who produced the study call for a One Health response.
Surveillance, diagnostic preparedness, animal movement controls, and active fly suppression. And that recommendation exposes the coordination problem. This is not a single ministry's job. It sits at the intersection of agriculture, public health, and border policy, and it requires money, trained entomologists, cold chain logistics for sterile fly programs, and cross-border cooperation. Reddit threads reflected the predictable mix of horror and policy nostrums. People asked for immediate restoration of sterile insect releases, calls for better livestock surveillance, and blunt questions about whether climate shifts or trade movements widen the fly's range. And those are not just armchair points. They map to real decisions governments will face about where to spend scarce public dollars. Practically speaking, expect 3 near-term pressures. First, emergency triage and training for clinicians in affected regions to diagnose and surgically remove larvae early. Second, urgent extension of animal surveillance and movement restrictions to slow spread along trade routes. And third, political fights over rebuilding the sterile fly program or funding alternative suppression strategies, because rebuilding a herd, a surveillance network, or a regional eradication campaign takes years and cannot be improvised overnight. For listeners who want a simple mental model, this is a health shock that behaves like an agricultural crisis and a border security problem at the same time. It hits people, livestock, and trade simultaneously. So siloed responses will underperform, and the clock on preventing northward establishment is short.
Now shift from biting insects to financial leverage. According to an account relayed by Johns Hopkins economist Steve Hanke and published commentary from Mario Nowfall, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman privately warned President Trump that Riyadh could sell large holdings of U.S. treasuries to deter planned strikes on Iran. And that threat, if it happened as described, is a striking example of economic coercion used to influence a military decision. Caveat first. Reuters and other outlets confirmed Saudi calls for de-escalation, but did not independently verify that Riyadh explicitly threatened a treasury sell-off, so treat the core claim as secondhand reporting until further confirmation. The sourcing matters because the leverage implied, a creditor weaponizing a $27 trillion government bond market, is both plausible and destabilizing if true. The report ties the intervention to immediate market moves. Oil prices reportedly fell more than 5% after de-escalation signals, and U.S. stock indices reacted positively while 10-year yields slipped, which is the mechanistic logic that makes a treasury threat credible in the first place. A big forced sale can push yields up quickly, tightening U.S. financing conditions and increasing borrowing costs across the economy. But weaponizing treasuries is not cost-free for a creditor. Saudi foreign reserves and dollar assets would be hit by a precipitous sell-off, and market actors would price the risk of retaliatory or preemptive actions into currency and asset values. So it's a risky, blunt instrument that can boomerang on the issuer. The broader strategic takeaways are threefold. First, this story illustrates how modern coercion blends finance and force.
A military flashpoint can be steered by balance sheets as much as by ships and missiles. Second, it exposes a structural vulnerability in the U.S. system that many commentators have long warned about, namely concentrated foreign holdings that create geopolitical leverage. And third, whether the threat was ever uttered or not, the idea that a creditor could use treasuries as a bargaining chip lowers the threshold for markets to act like geopolitical sensors, amplifying instability. Reddit commenters on the economics thread split between relief that a wider war may have been averted and skepticism about the provenance of the claim, and that split is exactly the right reaction. It is wise to hope for de-escalation while also demanding independent verification before rewriting policy in response. Policymakers face an awkward set of choices. Reduce vulnerability by broadening treasury buyer bases and shrinking large concentrated holdings, build surge fiscal capacity so bond markets are less fragile to one actor's sales, or, more politically fraught, pursue tighter financial linkages that limit the ability of foreign sovereigns to weaponize portfolios. Each option has trade-offs in cost and geopolitical signal, and none is a quick fix. Put those two deep stories together and you get a broader pattern. Governments are now juggling threats that are biological, technological, and financial, and each domain pushes different agencies into the front lines. Veterinarians and entomologists on one day, bond desks and central bankers the next, which should force a simple administrative reality. Security budgets and plans need to be flexible enough to fund both maggot removal and market stabilization.
If a small fly can tear tissue and a large creditor can threaten a market, then resilience now means funding entomology teams and financial backstops in the same budget cycle. I'm Alex Morgan from Debug the Hype.